Hello, it's Thursday, December 8th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio. Before we get started today, we have a real quick report from Patriot Jim Kuzua down in Tampa, Florida. Why don't you read what Jim had to say?
He said, to all of you, it was an experience. For now, let me say one thing. After listening to William Rodriguez's emotional presentation, we just can't ever stop. These bastards have to pay for this. Convictions and executions. Step it up. 10 notches. 20. 30. 100 notches. I don't know. Whatever it takes. Make it a New Year's resolution. Max it out. God bless. Jim Kuzua.
So hopefully we'll have more reports from him as
I think he's all fired up.
Yeah. He said emotionally drained in his email. So, as everybody knows now, this is December 8th, 25 years ago today, at 10:49 p.m., John Lennon was shot and killed outside of his Dakota apartment. Now, there's a lot of different talk that maybe Mark David Chapman wasn't even the shooter, he wasn't the gunman. We're not going to really get into that stuff today. Instead, we're going to focus on is John Lennon. And as all of you know, in the early 70s, Don McLean wrote a song about Buddy Holly. It was called American Pie, and he sang about when the music died. Well, anybody who's our age or older knows that the music also died 25 years ago today when John Lennon was killed. And in all honesty, rock and roll has never been the same since that night. Now, to talk about this, we're actually bringing on a special guest. He was with me 25 years ago when John Lennon got murdered. His name's the Duke, and we'd like to welcome to Wing TV right now. How you doing, Duke?
Hey, Duke.
Hey, what's up? Good, how are you?
Well, doing real good. This is one hell of an anniversary, and it doesn't seem like it could possibly be 25 years. But let's go back to that night. We're in your car. It was a blue Camaro, late at night. We went to visit some friends that weren't home, so we were sitting out in the parking lot, listening to the radio when the news came on. What were your thoughts then, and what are your thoughts now about what happened that night?
Well, obviously my thoughts then revolved around shock for probably the whole time you and I were sitting there. Something that drastic, I don't believe the human mind is capable of completely digesting it right away. So you go into shock, and your body kind of takes over. Your mind, I guess, is working just a little bit at the time, and you kind of do things that are habitual, which, of course, given the time period that was and the situation that we're in, I'm sure you can figure out what that means. But I think it wasn't until probably the next day or the following couple days where the actual magnitude and reality of it set in, at which point you have to begin to try and understand it. You reason with yourself and figure out why and what does this mean, and how can there be people like that? And there's, you know, 297 questions that race through your mind over the next over a period of time that you wrestle to answer. So I mean, that's basically what I'm looking at back then. Today it's just all part of 10,000 things that led me to be as angry as I am.
Yeah,
I hear you.
We agree. Duke, there have been a lot of articles and a lot of controversy regarding John Lennon's murder, whether Chapman was under mind control like Sirhan Sirhan, and if the murder actually was part of a bigger conspiracy that went further than Mark David Chapman. We also know a month earlier, Ronald Reagan had been elected president. So my question to you is, do you think John Lennon was a threat to this incoming president and his administration?
No, I don't think that at all. Possibly if it would have been some other president, I might think that even a little bit. But no, Reagan coming from the entertainment industry and having been exposed to L.A. and all that stuff most of his life, and being the, well, I consider him a pretty reasonable guy. No, I don't think that had anything to do with it at all. If any source of government had anything to do with it, I think it was below the president.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that, too. But, yeah, I think with Reagan, a lot of the times, many things were going on that he was outside the loop of, especially with George Bush Sr., you know, as his VP. Now, what we want to do in this interview is kind of go chronologically through Lennon's life. And every Sunday morning, I listen to a show called Breakfast with the Beatles. And Lennon said last Sunday in an interview from years ago that he always thought in his mind that he was destined to be famous, even from a very early age. And this is the same kind of thing that Bob Dylan said once in a 60 Minutes interview. So tell us what you think about this cosmic alignment when there are these four lads from Liverpool who became the Beatles. I mean, it's just so far above and beyond, and they're all led by John Lennon.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you got it, you got it, and you know it, basically. And I think that, you know, there's no doubt that Lennon possessed some quality that I don't even know if anybody can nail it down, that almost no other human beings possess. Yeah, cosmic alignment for sure. I mean, it's just the stars aligned and these four people came together. And given the ideas of the two songwriters, Lennon in particular, especially in the early days, it just was things that people never heard before. And it just caught on like wildfire, almost like just off the top of my mind, and I haven't thought about this at all, but I mean, it caught on almost like computers did.
Right.
It just took off like a wildfire in the California desert where everything's so dry and can burn right away.
Right.
And almost as it goes, things begin to increase exponentially. And it just, I think it all basically revolved around, yeah, Ringo was in the right place at the right time, very lucky.
Yeah.
Okay. George Harrison, even, although he is what I consider a half genius, was in the right place at the right time, really lucky. And that's the only reason he was there is because he could make his guitar be a little bit fuzzy.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but basically the main thing was, you know, the songwriting, okay, and presenting these new types of songs and ideas to the public, which was basically mainly John Lennon and McCartney had a lot to do with
exactly.
it. And that's the thing that spurred all that.
Dude, when you listen to the Beatles' early stuff, songs like I Want to Hold Your Hand, and you see that it's far different from the later material, like around the mid-60s, when their music changed dramatically, coinciding with their drug experimentation with marijuana and subsequently LSD. What are your impressions of the psychedelic impact that drugs like LSD had on the Beatles' music?
I think it had a huge effect on it. You know, how can it not? I mean, you're having a brain that's thinking of these songs, and now you're having a brain that is altered thinking of these songs. So, I mean, it definitely had a lot to do with it, but it also had a lot to do with the fact that now you have a person who's, you know, 5 years older or 6 years older, who thinks differently the way that they did 5 years ago. So that had something to do with it as well. And the fact that any musician that I've known is always looking for a way to move forward and to not stagnate and to try different things. And when you're like those guys or anyone else that does that for a living, I mean, you have the time to sit there and think about that. Like, where do we want to go? You've got all day and night to do it. Throw in the fact that you just happen to have the best musical genius brain of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're able to really take that and push it into a realm that, you know, just about or anybody else wouldn't have been able to. But, yeah, you know, drugs had a lot to do with it, for sure.
Yeah. Now, John Lennon's known as probably one of the greatest political activists ever in the music field. And he went through things like bagism and the bed-ins, his anti-war marches, the White Panther rallies, his meetings with Jerry Rubin and Abbie Hoffman. What differentiated Lennon politically from other rock stars who are content to just shoot heroin or lay around in their mansions?
Well, I think, you know, he was more motivated for some reason, was very intelligent and extremely persistent. I think he was too smart to be locked into a couch and a needle. I just think that there's no way that a brain like that could just sit there and deal with that. And it just pushed him into who just sits there and does their drugs and sleeps, you know, 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
We had a guest on our show last Friday named Adam Gorightly, who's written extensively about Charles Manson. Now, we all know the Manson murders became known as Helter Skelter, and that Manson supposedly said he was getting messages through Beatles songs. How do you think John Lennon thought about this, these horrific murders that Manson linked to specific songs John Lennon wrote?
I don't think he thought much of it at all, really. I think he acknowledged it and was aware of it. But I think when you're that famous and, you know, you're getting things coming at you just left and right, you're basically a young person trying to deal with this stuff. And I don't think you're able to really focus on any one of these million things that are coming at you. And I think to hear a blip through the media that, hey, there's this guy killing people in America, and he's saying that the Beatles songs told him to do it, I think he probably just brushed it off and said, well, you know, this is something, a story that the media is trying to create, and, you know, I wasn't telling anybody to kill anybody. What's next?
Right.
Yeah. Now, the word genius has come up a lot in this show, and as you've said, Lennon was one of the most gifted songwriters and also cultural icons ever in not only this country but the world. Then we have Yoko Ono. Duke, how does that thing fit into the big picture?
I don't even know if I can say this on your show, but the only thing I can attribute it to, and please get ready to hit a beep button if you have to, is the power of the pussy. I mean, that's about all I can think of. And I've been there myself. You know, it's just, it can make you do the strangest, weirdest things that just aren't you. And I don't know how or why, but, I mean, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and for some reason he was just madly, madly in love with her. As far as the music goes, I mean, you know, I don't even consider rap, okay, music. I don't even consider that music. But I consider any attempt at music that she made even less than that.
Don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel. Continuing this thought, I hope, I understand you saw a movie called John and Paul. We saw that one, too. And near the end of that movie, they're about to go to Saturday Night Live Studios because Lorne Michaels had offered them $100 to do this Beatles reunion gig. But then John gets a phone call from Yoko, and he's seen curling at the end of the movie into this fetal tuck in one of the final scenes under Yoko's influence. So my question is, what do you think was the extent of Yoko's control over him beyond, like, what you already said? A lot of people think she had this psychotic kind of control over him.
Well, I think her control over him was about as close to 100% as you can get. And you could probably sit 10 psychiatrists down and have 10 different answers as to why. And I sure don't know the answer exactly as to why. I think that what I said answering the previous question probably has, you know, something to do with it, if not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I, you know, I also believe that she's an extremely intelligent person, knew what she wanted, got it, and was able to hold on to it and manipulate it any way she wanted to.
Very shrewd.
Yeah,
well, extremely. And how she made that happen, I mean, you know, without being a fly on the wall for, you know, the 15 or 20-year period, I have no idea what she did there. If I could do that, I'd be, you know, a multimillionaire myself.
Yeah.
So I don't know that secret, but, yeah, she's, I would have to say, very smart.
Yeah. Now, Duke, considering Sgt. Pepper's, the White Album, Let It Be, Revolver, Rubber Soul, all these great, great albums, in my opinion, the best album John Lennon ever put out was called The Plastic Ono Band, and the first time I ever heard this album was when you turned me on to it. So I want to ask you two questions. First of all, we know that Lennon was going through this primal scream therapy, and that becomes very apparent on the album. I want you to tell me about two songs. First of all, Working Class Hero, and second of all, God.
Well, I mean, they're both unbelievable songs. The emotion that comes through is just alarming. And to take just three chords and have it be so moving, It's just so pure genius. It's just not even funny. But those two songs just reek of really, really powerful, absolute emotion that no other musician in the history of the planet was even able to come close to capturing. And let's face it, I mean, music is art, and part of the art is that, is moving people. And the way that you move people is through emotion and affecting their emotions.
Right.
And, you know, there's just never been ever another album that's moved. I'll cry every time I hear it for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it.
In the song God, which I love that song, he says the dream is over, and he's reflecting on how the 60s have ended. How disillusioned do you think John Lennon was at the close of the 60s that they hadn't changed the world?
I think he was very disillusioned because he tried so hard. And I guess, you know, I guess he was willing to continue trying, but I think he probably expected to see something different sooner or better to his liking. And I think he was extremely disillusioned. I think that he probably thought that with his fame and everything else, he probably could make things happen a little better. But then, you know, just found out that no matter who you are, short of being God, it's just, you know, it's too big of a fight. And I think the frustration of him, like, coming to a realization about that, you know, is reflected in lines like what you just said.
Yeah.
You know, the dream is over, and it's just frustration on his part.
Yeah. Now, I want to interject something here because we still have a couple more questions, but considering the Beatles' music, also the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin and the Who, Duke, how the hell did we get rap music?
You know, I had a discussion last night on the telephone with a friend of mine. It was my brother's best friend, a musician in L.A., and him and I spent probably 20 minutes of the conversation trying to figure out that exact question, and I didn't know this question was coming, and talk about stars aligning, but this is a guy who's been a rock and roller. He's 40 years old all of his life. He's in that scene, and I mean, you know, he does it every day of his life and lives it. And he has no clue. The only thing that we can think of is that it's just some kind of a wild attempt, you know, a grasping at straws for today's youth to try and find something to be different, to, you know, to rebel against their parents and whatnot. But guess what? I mean, you know, the guitars have all been played as loud as they can go. The distortion has been turned up as much as it can be. There's nothing else that you can do with rock and roll at this point in time that's going to shock or abhor anybody. And I think that they just had to search for something else that they knew was really going to bother everybody except their group.
Would you tell me, when you're going to the gas station or you're at a stoplight and you hear this boom, 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 and you look over and it's some 21-year-old kid in his mother's SUV, what thoughts go through your head?
Well, rage goes through my head because I just can't stand it. I just wish I could make it stop, but, you know, I can't. So it's just another thing that I have to try and put blinders on, and just, I know it's there. There's nothing I can do about it. It makes me sick to the point where my stomach hurts. What can you do? I mean, it's there. It's there to stay, obviously, because it's completely taken over. And, you know, I wish I could rip off those loud mufflers that they put on their car and just beat them over the head with the muffler.
In the mid to late 70s, John essentially retired from the music scene and disappeared from the public eye. He cocooned in the Dakota, became a house husband, and there's reports that he and Yoko were doing heroin during those days. Why do you think Lennon decided to reemerge onto the public scene shortly before his murder?
Well, I think that's a pretty easy question to answer. If you're given just an absolute gift, and it's a gift to the magnitude that he had, his gift, I mean, how can you just
exactly.
You can't. You can't. It's going to come out. It's going to get to the point where you're not humanly able to suppress something like that. And when you have these ideas that are just popping in your head without trying about songs that you know are going to be just pure gold, you can't keep it in. And you're sitting there and you're saying, well, I just thought of this song that it's the best song I ever heard.
And, you know, maybe he was going to give it another shot at trying to change the world.
Yeah, that's possible, I suppose. But, I mean, at 40 years old, you know, I don't know if he had the piss and vinegar that he did when he was, you know, in his 20s.
But he had the wisdom.
Yeah.
More wisdom.
Oh, I'm sure he had way more wisdom. Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But, you know, I think, you know, you just, you start to run out of gas, you know. and you start to kind of say, well, all right, you know, just like me with the rappers in the car next to me, I mean, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I probably would have rolled my window down and started a fist fight. But now it's just, you know what? All that's going to do is provide problems for me. I already have my own problems. Just keep going.
Yeah. Well, Duke, one last question. There's something I call the Lennon syndrome, and that's when people are constantly searching for the answers. And with John, there was drugs. There was a Maharishi. There was Primal Scream, Hare Krishna, politics, so forth. He even wrote a song once where the refrain was, all I want is the truth, just give me some truth now. Do you think John Lennon ever found what he was looking for?
No chance. Absolutely no chance whatsoever. No way. No. I think that a lot of people are searching. It might not be the truth, but it's for something. And I think a lot of us spend our entire life, you know, searching for what we're searching for. No, I don't think he found the truth. I don't think he even came close.
Yeah. Well, Duke, we couldn't have thought of a better person to come on Wing TV to talk about this stuff. And we just want to thank you. And your insights and your perspective on Lennon are just amazing.
And everything else. Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't thank you enough for, I remember the day like it was yesterday, not only when Lennon was shot, but also when you turned me on to that Plastic Ono album, and I was like, what the hell is this? Where did this come from? You know?
Just... Yeah, I remember it too. I mean, I couldn't remember it more. And I'm sure between me and you, you remember exactly what we did at that precise moment.
Yes, I certainly do. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to close the show up now. I asked Duke if there's one Lennon song, what he would like it to be at the end of the show. He picked Working Class Hero. So, Duke, thanks again. Everybody out there listening to this show, sit back and enjoy what this man produced. We'll see you tomorrow on Wing TV.
Thanks a lot, Duke. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home, and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever, and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy, you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. If you want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.